Welcome to Parents Perspective. Ladies and gentlemen, announced 8-year-old Tony, I am Presto the Magician, and I will do great tricks for you. The neighborhood kids squirmed in their seats on Tony's front steps. His 5-year-old brother Timmy stood next to him. Tony beckoned to his brother, who came forward with a small red plastic bucket. Here, we just have a bucket. Tony motioned to Timmy, who held up the pail. Now my assistant will hold the pail. Tony waved to Timmy, while I pour water into it. Tony then produced a watering can and filled the bucket with water. You can see, he said, motioning to the water coming from the spout. This is just water. His audience sat quietly. But now, Tony produced a clear plastic pitcher and set it on a little wooden table in front of him. Watch this! And he took the red bucket from Timmy and poured the water into the pitcher. Only the water had turned green. Ta-da! He exclaimed, smiling. His audience clapped enthusiastically. I know how he did that, whispered 9-year-old Kenny to his pal Grant. He put some kind of green powder in the bottom of that bucket. Grant grimaced. No, he whispered back. Come on. Yes, he did, insisted Kenny. I bet you $1,000,000. Anyway, I can do a better trick than that. I've got some really neat cards. From a parent's perspective, what is it about magic that's so special for kids? I'm Sandy Burt.
And I'm Linda Perlis. Our guest has had experience with magic at and for all ages. Bradley Fields saw his first magic show at school when he was 7 years old. He has since gone on to become one of the most accomplished magicians in the world, having performed on roadway, television, and in performing arts centers from coast to coast and around the world. His educational show, Mathemagic, has been seen live by an estimated 3 million children over the past 20 years. Bradley has 2 grown sons, one still in college. Welcome to Parents Perspective, Bradley.
Thank you, Linda. It's good to be here.
Why are kids so attracted to magic?
Why? What a good question. I can tell you my own story, and it was indeed that show that I saw at school when I was 7 years old. It was probably the most profound experience in my life. It's something when I think of it, the feeling still comes back. It was earth-shattering. It was wonderful. It awakened somehow a sense of wonder, which is always there but somehow gets buried. I think when you're really, really young, everything is just magical. You get a little older, things begin to become a little mundane, a little routine. You get set, you go to school, you have things you do during the day, and everything seems kind of boring. Then, all of a sudden, as you were just describing, water appears out of nowhere. I remember this magician in my school auditorium taking a fishing rod with a little worm on it and throwing it out into the audience, and a fish appeared right in the middle of the audience. I just remember gasping. My eyes were wide open, and nothing was the same after that. So the experience is you just want to be a part of it, feel it, inhabit that world. It just awakens this feeling of pure, absolute wonder, which is just the best emotion you can experience. Then I just had to know more about it, and someone suggested I go to the library. That was my very first trip to a public library. And that got me to the library, and I looked in the card catalog that they used to have in those days, remember? And I looked under magic, and I was just old enough to start reading. And there was just an amazing, just a section on magic and book. There were books you can learn how to do that. And at that age, it wasn't so much learning the secrets or learning how to do it or I know how he does it. It was really you just wanted to make it happen. You want to get close to it. When you're watching a show on a stage especially, it's like the stage becomes almost a sacred kind of space and you're in awe of it. I mean, when he asked for volunteers, everybody wanted to go on the stage. And yet at the same time, you had a respect for it. So going to the library, I started reading books, and the books themselves were just a wonderland. They had great books back then on how to be a magician. I read the biographies of magicians. That was my start. Now, how you get out of it, again, like most people, it's a stage in their development, and then they have a normal life. And yet I have met people from all walks of life, doctors, dentists, lawyers. As a matter of fact, I've met people in their 70s, 80s years old, and they look at me as, you know, when I was a kid, I saw the most amazing magician. And you just see them go back in time 60 years. It's an amazing thing. One person, a very well-known documentary filmmaker, once told me, when I was a boy, every Sunday we'd go to vaudeville. And my father would take me every Sunday to vaudeville. And we saw the greatest magicians. Oh, and they just relived that time. And I remember he said, and you know who the greatest of them all was? Houdini. I saw Houdini. And he got all, lit up. So another one, I met a man. I go to every year to a performing arts conference. And there was a man across the aisle from me. And he came over to me and he saw my display. Said, Bradley Fields, magic and so forth. And he was a representative for a ballet company. He was English. And he said, you probably never heard of this, but do you ever hear of Maskelyne and Devant? And I said, well, of course, because that was a part of my childhood. They had a magic show which ran for, maybe 50 years in the 1880s all the way to the 1930s. And they were a household name in Britain, in London. And he said, of course I have. He says, when I was a child, I went to see Maskelyne and Devant. It was just, and again, you'd see the whole emotion come back and so forth. So it really is an experience, even if you go on to other things in life, that can bubble up in you and stays alive in you.
So it's really capturing the sense of wonder.
I think so.
That
in
they
its
all
most
have.
Basic form, yeah.
What's the difference between magic and fantasy? We're sort of into a lot of fantasy these days with a lot of very, very popular movies and stories like the Harry Potter series and so forth. What's the difference?
There's a connection, and Harry Potter is a mega, mega, whatever it is, it's mega. the books, the movies, and there I think, it's a story, isn't it? The difference is, from a regular story, where you would have characters, it could happen in your own backyard. Here, you create a world which is beyond every day. And so you can have broomsticks and flying carpets. When I was a kid, we didn't have Harry Potter back then. So I read the Thousand and One Nights. And again, you would just Alibaba and the 40 Thieves, what else? Aladdin. So you can imagine yourself rubbing a lamp and a genie would appear. And it's not something you get in real life. So the difference is, though, magic is an actual trick, an actual show, an actual performance, which has a physicality to it. You can actually, see it right before your very eyes. Is the book better than the movie? Probably. I don't know. You can imagine things. Imagination is always good. However, with a real live magic show, a real magic show provokes the imagination somehow. You see something live, it has a physicality to it, and yet it intimates, suggests something beyond what you're actually seeing. And I think that's one of the appeals of magic. As I said, water appears out of nowhere. Where did it come from? And it just, then you're left in wonder.
And when you're witnessing it,
when
it
you're
has
witnessing
an immediacy.
It has an impact, an immediacy, yeah. Now, when kids get a little older, then, as you were saying in your story, the 9-year-old says, I know how he did that. Now, when you get older, that's when they start saying that. I know how he did that. And a lot of it is the little ego developing, maybe. A lot of it is you get to a stage where you start to want to figure things out. The wonder's still there, but you want to get closer, so you start being methodical about it. I always had a quote when I had my programs in theaters from Einstein, and Einstein said, the most beautiful thing we can experience is the mysterious. It is the fundamental emotion which stands at the cradle of true art and true science, and he who knows it not is as good as dead. And I always use that because you have someone like Einstein. I don't know if he had a magic show, but I think what got him was a compass. His father gave him a compass, and it's a kind of a magical object. Why is the needle moving around? There's no connection to anything. So it evokes this sense of wonder, and then that can in turn get you into, for example, science. A lot of people get into science through magic and other things too.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to continue our discussion on magic and children.
Popular new book, Raising a Successful Child, Discover and Nurture Your Child's Talents, by Sandra Burt and Linda Perlis, is available at all major bookstores and on the web.
Welcome back to Parents' Perspective. We are talking with magician Bradley Fields about magic and children.
Are there specific ages and stages when kids are especially drawn to magic?
Well, for me, it was 6 or 7. Every kid is different. Mothers come to me and say, you know, my little girl is turning 2. She's going to have a birthday party. We're thinking of getting a magician. Can you recommend so? And I go, 2 is too young.
Mm-hmm.
Because at 2, everything is magical.
Yeah.
And so you have to get to that point where everything isn't so magical. So I would say the very youngest, I would say 4. I don't have a study done on this, but 4 or 5, maybe 5, 6 is a good age. 6, 7, 8, 9, and then you get into the sort of the pre-teenage years. Although I really got into it, when I was 6 or 7. What happened with me was when I was 13, it was 12, it was kind of waning because I didn't have much guidance. I didn't have a magic club, but I met a kid and he was really into it. And he was more aggressive than I was. He was already doing birthday parties and making money at it, like $3 an hour.
Oh, how old was he?
He was 13.
Oh, my goodness.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
And $3 an hour sounded good to me. So he kind of provoked me. And then, by circumstance, my mother owned an answering service. And a professional magician, who I had actually seen on television, came to her and said, I need some services from you answering my phone. And she says, oh, well, you've got to meet my son. And he was such a generous person that I got a phone call. And he said, I'm wondering if you can help me. I'm looking for an assistant. And that was the beginning of touring for 4 years. While I was in school, every weekend and night times and over the summer, we did television shows, we did nightclubs, club dates, school shows, amazing school show he did. And in fact, one of the best shows I've ever seen was at a birthday party because he brought his whole stage paraphernalia into someone's living room. And it was in this small space with the birds appearing and everything. It was just incredible. So that was a great experience for me. Now, that was serendipitous. As I say, most kids, or maybe not serendipitous because that's what got me where I am, but most people go beyond it and they become doctors and dentists and have it as a hobby or something.
What have you found is especially beneficial for kids about an interest in magic?
Well, I would say, number one, it does keep that sense of wonder alive in you. But if you learn to actually, if you want to become a magician, number one, you learn how to stand up in front of people, public speaking. Many, many of the really famous entertainers we have today started out doing magic shows, little magic shows as kids. I can name like Steve Martin and many comedians, actors, really said it's the greatest training in the world because you have to get up in front of people and you have something you can do. If you can learn to do a trick, then you find that you have to talk to the audience, how to address them, how to stand, how to be up in front of people. And so that's a really good training if you want to go into any kind of public speaking or performing or entertaining. So that's another good thing. Also, just to learn a trick, you have to learn sequence. You have to learn how to follow directions. I would say that if your child has an interest in magic, just really likes it, the best thing you could do is give them some kind of guidance because it's very hard to just learn it on your own. You can't really. So parents would have to read up a little.
Oh my.
There's magic clubs and you can seek out people who would be a mentor. But you learn sequence and you learn how to learn things one at a time. Then you learn practicing, just like learning a musical instrument, how to practice over and over and over and over until you get better and better and better and better.
So that the discipline of actually learning that skill.
Absolutely. It's just like learning to play the violin. The difference is when you learn to play the violin, it might take you 2 years before you can make a sound. With a magic trick, well, it's still the same way. You can kind of, with a simple, simple magic trick, you can kind of make something happen. But to get good at it takes years and years and years and years. So it really gets them into practicing and discipline only in a fun way.
You've touched on some of this a little bit already, but I wanted to know, since we mentioned your educational show, Mathemagic, how can a child's interest in magic help foster specific academic skills?
It does bring a lot of kids to science. Also, as I said, not only actors and comedians and so forth, but a lot of authors got their start doing magic. I mean, Ray Bradbury always talks about it. The one magician in the past who I'd really like to see, if I could bring up anybody from history, believe it or not, would be Charles Dickens. Charles Dickens was an avid amateur magician, and for his daughter's birthday, every year he would prepare these elaborate shows.
They weren't sad?
No.
Somebody asking for more soup? Okay.
Well, he was pretty affluent, but he prepared these elaborate shows, and it was good. It was back then in the 19th century. He embellished it, you can imagine, with his imagination and his storytelling, and he had that beard, you know, it looked like a magician. So a lot of people get into playwriting, screenwriting. A lot of filmmakers started out as doing magic tricks. It's a great entry into the arts in general. Then, of course, the science connection is that sense of wonder. I mentioned before Charles Dickens. I think some of the best magicians in the world are really amateurs. I met a pediatric dentist, works on children's teeth, and he came up to me and said, you know, I do a couple of tricks. I'm sure they're pretty amateurish. And he did these wonderful things. He made his tie stand up, and he does it to get the kids to relax, give them a good experience. So magic, it finds its way in many areas of life. And those are my favorites, actually, the dentist, the pediatric dentist, or the doctor who does a couple of tricks. I was once a consultant on a television show, and it was a show about a woman who was a surgeon. And the thing was, she was such a wonderful surgeon, but she always did magic tricks when she came into the ward. And so I had to teach her to do some magic tricks. So it became a part of the show. There's so many ways that magic can be introduced into life, in just very, very simple ways. The way I got into it is I took a year off and I started teaching in the New York City public schools. When my first child was born, I always had an interest in education. And it was pretty obvious, if you can do some magic, you had their attention. You had them spellbound, and they were open to anything, because it puts you in this state of openness where you're just open to learning. You're not threatened by anything. You don't have to achieve anything. You're just open to learning. So that, I think, is really beneficial in education. What I do in the Math and Magic show is I get that state of openness. Everything is magical. And then I apply it to math, because numbers are invisible. We don't know really what they are, but we know they're there. We don't know how quite it works, but some people can intuit, some people better than others, a mathematical universe. And when you see the first magicians were really mathematicians. A lot of people don't know that, but they understood math, so they were able to do things no one else could understand. They could predict when there would be an eclipse. So they became the wizards. And their secret was really math. And people like Pythagoras had a magical view of the universe. In fact, even Isaac Newton was experimenting with magic, alchemy. He believed, he half believed in it. And that led him to all his pretty much invented, or I don't know if he invented, but he was pretty much at the summit of science, which we have today. He really brought forth all the scientific principles. They culminated in him after Galileo. And so specifically in terms of academic skills, yes, it teaches you discipline, it teaches you sequence, it teaches you to follow directions. But beyond that, it just keeps you open.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to finish our discussion on magic and children.
For an audio CD of any parent's perspective show, send a check or money order for $15 with your name, mailing address, and phone number to Parents Perspective, P.O. Box 42283, Washington, D.C. 20015.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We're talking with professional magician Bradley Fields about magic and children.
Is there a point where kids become blasé about magic?
As I say, I would say when the sex hormones kick in.
That's about other things are more of interest.
Yeah, that's the downfall of life. After that, it's never good again. Because I had actually met a professional magician, it kept going on and on. And it becomes something different. And I've met a lot of like teenage magicians, high school magicians as I go around the country. And maybe less the sense of wonder. Now it's a sense of acumen, accomplishment, can show off a little. So that would be their thing, and they'd have like a little special place in school, you know, he's the magician. That's why when I do meet all these people who are professionals, when you say magic, they go back in time.
Any caveats for parents about having young homegrown magicians? Any dangers, warnings?
If they do join a magic club or have some kind of mentor, you should know who they are. Like with anything, whether it's a karate instructor or anything like that, you should just know who you're dealing with. And of course, you don't want them to do it to the exclusion of everything else, as I did. You don't want that.
They might be successful.
Yeah. Personally, and this is just my own opinion, the kinds of Dungeons and Dragons things I never really liked. I would kind of keep away from them. I like the pure positive kinds of magic, just simple birds appearing and water disappearing and red changing into green.
Is there anything else that you feel parents should know about this very special world of magic?
Well, just in my life, I've been all over the world, and it's just a universal thing. It's just everywhere you go, it's the same exact reaction.
If you perform in a country where you don't speak the language, does someone have to translate, or does magic speak for itself?
It depends. If you have a silent act, it speaks for itself. When I went to China, I actually had a simultaneous interpreter. And so that worked because I talk a lot. If you do a show which is pantomimic, you have to really learn pantomime and convey the emotion and so forth through the pantomime. So the magic isn't just learning a trick. When you start out, you're a kid, you just want to learn a trick. Just like being a comedian, like anybody can tell a joke or anybody can sing, but if you want to become a professional comedian or a professional singer, there's a whole lot more that goes with it. And putting together an act, which again is another discipline. But it is universal, I found, all over the world, so it must be something inherent within us. If your kid's really, really keen, you may want to get involved with the Society of American Magicians or the International Brotherhood of Magicians, and they have chapters all over the world or all over America. And if you call them, or I'm sure they're online now, you can find a local chapter near you. And they can help guide you.
They have something for children?
Oh, sure. They have magic camps. Well, they have a camp for everything nowadays. I'm sure you've... But they have magic camps where instead of just canoeing or whatever people do at camp, they get to learn magic. At the end of the year, they put on a show. When I was a kid, I belonged to something called FAME, F-A-M-E, Future American Magical Entertainers. And I remember I used to have to travel out to Brooklyn every weekend, and we found a place, and we'd all get together. It was very, very exciting, and I put on a show. I was a part of a show in Central Park in New York City at the Band Shell, one of the most nerve-wracking experiences of my life, standing up in front of, I don't know, hundreds and hundreds of people for the first time. But it was very, very exciting. It's an exciting thing to get into for kids.
What happens when aspiring magicians go to college?
For one thing, if you're really, if you've already aspired and, you know, you're pretty good at it, you can work your way through college. I did. And I was doing rock concerts. I was like the opening act for famous rock bands going through college. And that paid my way through. And then other than that, though, college will take up most of your time. But it was great for me. And I put on shows. I did rock concerts. See, I always knew that I was going to be in show business. So college was just sort of pro forma. Although I have to tell you, it was my interest in magic that got me into philosophy. You were talking before about science and so forth. Epistemology, which is the philosophy of how do you know something? How do you know something is real? How do you know anything? And with magic, you know that our sensory perceptions can be deceiving. And what you think is real is not real. And so you go looking for reality in higher and higher places. And it was my interest in magic. Well, I knew I was going to be in show business, so I wasn't looking for some trade school to learn how to do A, B, or C. I really wanted to know the answers. So that got me into philosophy, and that's an interest which I have to this very day.
Are there any other resources you would want to suggest? You've mentioned several organizations.
See if in your town there's a local magic shop. I'm just going to go back to college for a second. When I went to a local college when I first got out of high school, the president of the college was an avid amateur magician. That's how I got into the school that I transferred to, because he was friends with that president and he just sort of got me in. But you find them all over the place. People in all kinds of high places have this background in Pulitzer Prize winning authors, and that's really what got them into it.
It's a special club.
It's a special club. Yeah. But go try a local magic shop. To be honest, it's not what it used to be. When I was growing up it was a lot of old vaudevillians, and I would see them and just stand in awe and just take in the whole experience. I think that magic is not what it once was, and so maybe it'll come back again. So maybe I'm hoping that some young people out there might take up the baton or the magic wand, as it might be, and move forward. But I would go again, the Society of American Magicians, the International Brotherhood of Magicians, and also your local magic shop, and go to the library. Go to the library. There's all kinds of books and some really wonderful ones. And see if there's a local magic club in your area.
Well, this has been a magical interview, and we have learned an awful lot about magic and children and what we can do to help our own children who have a budding interest in magic. So, Bradley Fields, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you, Sandy, and thank you, Linda.
Our gift for our first caller is an autographed copy of our book, Raising a Successful Child, Discover and Nurture Your Child's Talents. Just call us toll-free at 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. That's 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. And please spell anything that's not obvious. That's a big help to us. Mention show number 446 and tell us, if you can, what station you're tuning into.
You can visit our website, www.parentsperspective.org, where you can even listen to a show of your choice. This is Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis. We're glad you could share Parents Perspective. At the end of our program, we often thank individuals or organizations for their generous donations that help with the cost of producing Parents Perspective. Parents Perspective Incorporated is a 501c3 nonprofit corporation. Donations can be made online through GiveDirect or iGive.com or MissionFish at eBay. Or checks can be mailed to Parents Perspective Incorporated, Post Office Box 42283, Washington, D.C., 20015. Thank you for helping us continue to work for you. Our sound engineer is Clayton Turner. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt.